My guest at this time is Jeremy Brecker, co-founder of the Labor Network for Sustainability. We want to get his thoughts as congressional Republicans once again pressure Senate Democrats as well as President Obama to approve the full construction of the Keystone XL pipeline. We are looking at the true economic impact of the extension if it were to go forward. Very different arguments on this issue, and Jeremy is here to explain why he believes the arguments are actually stronger against the construction of the pipeline when it comes to the economic outcome. And Jeremy, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Well, let's start with the main contention here by supporters of the extension of the Keystone XL pipeline, and that's that this will create 20,000 jobs at a time when America most needs it since our economy is still struggling. How do you respond to that?
Well, let's first of all acknowledge the very important fact that our economy is still struggling and that there's a tremendous need for jobs and that people are suffering from lack of jobs, and that that is particularly true for construction workers. So if this project was something that was going to be addressing that problem in some serious way, then I think we'd have to take a very serious look at it in spite of the very terrible environmental effects and climate effects that it's likely to have. But the reality is very, very different. The claim that this is some kind of solution, this Keystone XL pipeline, for America's jobs problems is almost laughable. President Obama gave his best calculations based on the information that's been supplied to the U.S. government that the KXL pipeline may create at most 2,000 jobs during a year or two while it's being constructed. And in terms of long-term permanent jobs, it will be creating something between 50 and 100 jobs. So the idea that this is somehow a major part of the solution to our terrible unemployment problem, it's hard to describe it as something other than a cruel hoax.
Two quick follow-ups to that. First of all, so you're saying the 20,000 would be spread out a couple thousand a year over a decade or so?
That's what I understand their contention is. But this is not the actual construction of the pipeline. It's only supposed to last a year or two. And there's actually only a couple of thousand jobs in that period.
The other thing you mentioned is the permanent jobs, 50 to 100, which the president referenced. Defenders of the pipeline say, well, it's an infrastructure project, and the president has made a big priority of infrastructure projects as a big part of the stimulus, and it's something he still is focused on. And those jobs obviously have an expiration date as well once the project is done. So what's the difference?
The biggest difference is what we get with infrastructure jobs are a reduction in our gas explosions and our water and sewer line breakage, and we get something that's good for us. With the pipeline, what we get is more devastating climate change and the threat spills and explosions that's happened with the other pipelines that are like it. In fact, the Keystone pipeline, for which the Keystone XL is kind of taken for namesake, has had devastating leaks and breakage that have had horrible effects in the states as it's come through.
We're talking with Jeremy Brecker of the Labor Network for Sustainability. And Jeremy, what about local economies? You mentioned, obviously, that you believe that the job creation has been overhyped compared to what the reality would be. Supporters of Keystone say that just by building this pipeline and it just existing in these local areas, that the company would have to pay property taxes, they got to pay for land use, and that therefore brings revenues into these local economies. Looking at your materials, you strongly believe that local economies will actually take a major hit if this happens. So explain that side of the equation.
First of all, let's recognize that, again, these areas that the pipeline goes through are in many cases in desperate economic straits. And it is no wonder that they're seriously interested in these possibilities for almost any kind of economic development. The most important part of this is that the pipeline company and the proponents of the KXL pipeline are saying, well, this will provide jobs in these for the people who live in these areas. Actually, when you begin breaking down the numbers, it turns out that somewhere between 85 and 90% of the people hired to do the work will not be from those local communities. In fact, a very large proportion of them will be from out of state. I think that the idea that they will get some tax revenue benefit from it may well be the case. I haven't seen a good study of that by an independent source. But the downside is the risk of environmental devastation in the communities that the pipeline goes through. And that is a very real risk.
Let's look at another aspect of this, and that is what the pipeline may or may not do in terms of helping us become more energy independent, or at least not rely as much on countries that are hostile towards us as opposed to Canada, which is obviously a friendly neighbor. Supporters of the pipeline say this could offset a lot of our otherwise foreign imported energy, and therefore that's better for us economically and in terms of our national security. How do you respond to that?
There was a fascinating article in the Wall Street Journal whose headline was, U.S. refiners don't care if Keystone gets built. And it says there's so much oil sloshing around. This is a quote from the Wall Street Journal. There's so much oil sloshing around the U.S. from its own wells that refiners don't need lots more heavy crude from the north to keep busy. The Keystone Pipeline project was initiated 5 years ago when there was thought that there would be perhaps a market for this terribly, terribly carbon-intensive polluting tar sands oil, either in the United States or more likely the original intent. It's a little hard to prove what these oil companies really are intending to do, but there's good evidence that their real intent was to ship the stuff to the Gulf Coast and refine it there and then sell it on the world market, not to use it in the United States. And that is much more likely now because competing forms of energy from the United States, including, as this article indicated, much lighter, easier to process forms of crude oil, are now, as the article says, sloshing around in the United States. So the idea that this is somehow going to replace oil that's coming from foreign countries just doesn't fit with what the facts as reported by the Wall Street Journal.
A couple of minutes left in our conversation with Jeremy Brecker of the Labor Network for Sustainability. And Jeremy, looking at that title, Labor Network for Sustainability, one of the things the supporters point to is that a number of organized labor unions are supportive of the project. So how do you react to that, and what do you tell your brethren in the labor movement about why you believe they're wrong on this?
There are several unions that have supported the pipeline. There are also several unions that have opposed it. For example, the nurses union has opposed the pipeline on public health grounds, that the fight against climate change is absolutely critical for the future of all of us, including the future of working people, and that this is a key battle to prevent the carbon pollution that's going into the atmosphere and raising global temperatures from having even more of the terrible health effects that it's already started having. Similarly, several of the transportation unions have opposed the Keystone XL, because they say this is the wrong way to go. We need transformation of our transportation system, not based on producing more fossil fuels and using them to run our vehicles, but moving towards transit, public transit systems and high-efficiency vehicles that are much, much less creating of fossil fuel pollution that's destroying our climate. Labor movement is divided, and I think you can tell who's looking to the past and who's looking to the future.
Jeremy, it's interesting that given all the different dimensions of the energy debate, that somehow Keystone has become the centerpiece of all the different interests involved in this debate. How did that happen?
You know, I think it's partially because people like world's leading climatologist Jim Hansen and a lot of other people stood up and said, this is really a place to draw the line with those who are destroying our climate, destroying our environment, and claiming that they're doing so in the name of creating jobs, when actually they're after just more profits for the most rapacious energy corporations in the world. And they stood up to them and they said, this is so important that we're willing to even get arrested at the White House or arrested on the pipeline course in order to communicate to the American people that this is really serious, that this threat is here, this threat is now, and we have to start drawing the line against the things that are destroying our climate. You know, that's an economic issue, too. There were $11 billion extreme weather events. The most famous, of course, was Superstorm Sandy. But there are many, and there are going to be growing numbers, and our whole economy is going to look like a place that was hit by Hurricane Sandy if we don't start drawing the line against the greenhouse gases that are creating climate catastrophe and start building an alternate economy, which, by the way, will be a much more jobs-intensive economy based on safe, clean, renewable energy.
Jeremy, we'll have to leave the conversation there. Thank you very much for your time today. We appreciate it very much.
Thank you.
Jeremy Brecker is co-founder of the Labor Network for Sustainability. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America, reporting for WND.com.